una alegre agrupación, con un ritmo original, nuestro son tradicional. Las trompetas inspirando, el sonero está cantando, el bajo con su tumbao y el tercero montuneando.
Have a wonderful program at syndicatednews.net about DNA. I'd like to introduce Dr. Blaine Bettinger. Dr. Blaine Bettinger is going to talk to us. Well, he's got a doctorate in genetics, but he's also an attorney. He's a registered patent attorney at the Syracuse, New York firm of Bond, Schoenick and King. He obtained a Bachelor of Science in Biology from St. Lawrence University in Canton, New York, his doctorate in biochemistry from SUNY, Upstate Medical University, and his law degree from the Syracuse University College of Law. He has an excellent interest and dedication to genetic genealogy, which combines traditional research with cutting-edge genetics to learn more about one's origins. He is currently the administrator of the Bettinger Surname Project and co-administrator, now I'm going to read this out, for NULL-439 DNA Project, and he's the author of The Genetic Genealogist. Now, his publications were actually too many to list here. So, Dr. Bettinger, are you with us?
Good evening.
Welcome to Syndicated News. We're so happy to have you.
Well, thank you for having me.
It's wonderful. I mean, your background, you're an attorney and you're a geneticist. You have a doctorate in genetics, and please tell us about this field.
Well, I've been doing traditional genealogy for a little over 20 years, and about 10 to 13 years ago, a new product began to be offered to genealogists and the public in general, and that was a DNA test that would look at certain segments of your DNA. And people were using these new products to learn more about their history, about their genealogy, and about their family. So there are generally about three different types, three popular types of genetic testing for genealogy and family purposes. Those are Y-DNA, mitochondrial DNA, and autosomal DNA. And I just thought I'd give a brief overview of each of those different types and how they can be used to learn more about yourself and your family and your history.
Oh, we'd love it. We would love it. Thank you.
Great. The first type is Y-DNA. And this type of DNA is actually only found in males. So only males have the Y chromosome. And what happens is the Y chromosome is passed down from father to son, father to son, father to son, over the generation, without many changes occurring in the sequence of that DNA. Every once in a while, there's a tiny change in that DNA that has no effect on the individual, but is essentially a way to differentiate between one person and another. So over time, these small changes accumulate, and you can look at differences between groups of people. So, for example, my own Y chromosome has been tested, and it belongs to a group of Y chromosomes that originated in Western Europe. That looks at your more ancient history associated with your Y chromosome. And my father will have the same Y chromosome, my grandfather, his great-grandfather, and onward back through time. So what's so interesting about the Y chromosome is that it follows the surname of a traditional family. So if you were to take your own surname and follow it back through your father and his father, that would be the same line that the Y-DNA has followed. And Y-DNA is also useful in a more recent time frame. So, for example, as I said, the first type of testing for Y-DNA looks at ancient genealogy, tens of thousands, even hundreds of thousands of years ago. But Y-DNA is also useful for more recent research. For example, some of those tiny changes occur frequently enough that you can differentiate between just a couple of generations. So, for example, my immigrant ancestor who came to America in the late 1700s, he and I would have likely slightly different Y chromosomes in this regard. And this is used for what's called surname projects. So, for example, I'm the administrator of a Bettinger surname project. And what I do is I try to recruit Bettingers from across the world to take this test to determine just how closely they are related through their paternal line. For example, this particular group has determined that all Bettingers are actually not, in fact, related through their paternal line, and that the Bettinger surname has originated multiple times in different families. There are some very large projects, like the Williams Project, and there are some very small projects, like my own project. Y-DNA is often used by individuals who are trying to identify their paternal ancestor. For example, a male, again, remember, the Y-DNA is only found in male, a male who has been adopted or is the child of a donor, he may want to try to identify his paternal line. And he can use Y-DNA as a potential clue to do this very thing. So, for example, one company that does Y-DNA testing called Family Tree DNA, they have an extremely large database of people who have taken this Y-DNA test. And by searching someone's results against their database, which is something they do for a customer, then it's very often that you'll find close or relatively close matches in their database. And you can then use that as a clue to try to identify your biological surname, for example. And according to some anecdotal reports, as many as 30% of people who try to find a potential surname or a paternal match to the paternal line using Y-DNA, approximately 30% of people are successful at doing this. Through Family Tree DNA, for example. So it's a very powerful tool for people who are trying to, for males especially, who are trying to find their paternal ancestors. Another type of DNA testing is the mitochondrial DNA testing. And this is, if you were to plot your family tree, it's the mirror image of the paternal line. Because mitochondrial DNA is passed down from mother to child, mother to child. Now, both males and females will have mitochondrial DNA, but only the mother will pass it on to the next generation. So, for example, my sister and I would have the same mitochondrial DNA, but only she would pass it on to her children. So if you follow your mitochondrial DNA line back through time, it's your mother's 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 mother, all the way back through time. And very similar to the Y-DNA line, it's useful for both learning about ancient origins and for more recent origins. For example, my own mitochondrial DNA is, it belongs to a group of people who were native to North America. And so by doing this type of test, you can also learn about not only your ancient origins like that, but also origins in a more genealogically relevant time frame. So, for example, it's often used to determine whether two individuals were related. So if I have a family 100 years ago and I have two individuals in that family, often two sisters, and I'm not sure whether or not they were actually related, I can do this mitochondrial DNA test of their descendants, who they've passed their mitochondrial DNA down to, and try to determine whether or not they may in fact have been related. One of the tools, one of the tricks of Y-DNA and mitochondrial DNA testing is to follow the Y-DNA and mitochondrial DNA through the family tree. So if you're thinking about taking this type of test, it can be useful for not only you to trace your line back, so your father's 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 or your mother's mother's mother, but also tracing that Y-DNA forward. So if you go back 100 years through your Y-DNA, you can also do an exercise where you go forward 100 years and try to follow all the lines where that Y-DNA has ended up in order to do, for example, a comparative test to try to find if, to identify a certain ancestor, for example. So there's lots of different ways that Y-DNA and mitochondrial DNA testing can be used. The third type of DNA testing is the newest, and that's called autosomal DNA. The Y-DNA test looks at a tiny segment of the overall DNA in your cell, in each of your cells. The mitochondrial DNA is an even smaller segment. So 99% of the DNA that makes up you is actually not looked at in those first two types of tests. This last test looks at many, many, over a million locations throughout your DNA. And using those results, a couple of different things can happen. First, there's a tool called, each company will have a slightly different name, but it's essentially an ethnicity calculator. It estimates very roughly what percentage of your DNA came from certain areas of the world. In very broad terms, the regions could be the Americas, or Asia, or Africa, or Europe. Those are generally the broad categories. Some tests will do a little bit more refinement where they'll look at certain regions within those, such as Northern Europe, or Central Europe, or Southern Europe, for example, Southeast Asia, regions such as that. These calculations are very rough, and they'll vary from company to company based on the information they're using to calculate that and the computer algorithms they use to do that. And so this is a very early science. I wouldn't put a lot of weight in your particular estimates at this point in time, but it's a fun exercise. Now, the even more popular use of this type of autosomal DNA testing is to try to identify genetic cousins. So each of the companies that offer this autosomal DNA testing, they'll load your results into their database along with the results of all the other test takers in their database. And then they'll do a comparison. They'll try to identify segments of DNA from your results that match segments of DNA from other people. And if there's a significant segment of DNA that's shared, that suggests that you're related, that in fact you have an ancestor who contributed DNA to your cells and a DNA to the other person. And based on the amount of DNA that's shared, the size of the segments, these companies can roughly, very roughly, estimate the degree of relationship. So, for example, ranging anywhere from parent or sibling to a distant cousin, for example. So these types of tests are extremely popular with individual genealogists first who want to learn more about their family tree and want to share research with their genetic cousins, for example. But not only that, it's also very popular with people who have been either adopted or are otherwise unaware of who their biological parents might be. By using these types of tests, they can attempt to find genetic cousins and hopefully find a match that's close enough to help them fill in the gaps in their family tree. So, for example, I have an ancestor in my family, my great-grandmother, and she was adopted immediately upon her birth. And I currently do not know who her biological parents were. However, I'm trying to use autosomal DNA testing to try to find her biological parent. So I've taken a test, and another one of her descendants has taken a test. And by looking at the segments of DNA that we share, this is the DNA we've inherited from my great-grandmother. And I can look for other people in the databases that match these segments. And then by learning about their family trees, I can try to find individuals who may have been in the right place at the right time. And by doing that, I can gain hints or clues towards trying to find my great-grandmother's biological parents. Other individuals have the same experience, but with a much more close relative, such as a biological parent. Often, siblings who don't know their siblings because they're the children of a donor parent, for example, they'll find each other in these databases and work together to find their parents. So there are a number of success stories. It's a challenge because none of these tests just turn over your result, your family tree. So a lot of it is a combination of the DNA test, and then a lot of legwork afterwards. But there's a lot of promise here, and there are a number of very encouraging success stories for people who are trying to learn more about their particular family tree. Now, in addition go ahead.
One of the questions that's come up many times when I've been helping young people establish themselves or in education or even in medical crises is when they have a condition that they can't trace back, and we've always had to go to DNA to find out exactly who is who, mostly with issues such as leukemia and Tay-Sachs even, and heart disease. Could you give us some information on that? Because that seems to be very prevalent today in families cooperating or not cooperating in terms of what information they want to release. What I want people to learn is that they should be open about releasing that information and not make it difficult. Though in some cases, some families are very cooperative, and I'm finding that that's becoming just the way it is. Could you give us some information on medical conditions that are carried genetically, that it would help speed up the time of getting medical care if you had that information?
Sure. So it's absolutely a very sensitive topic. Many people, even DNA testing in general is a very sensitive topic. Many people are often reluctant to undergo DNA testing because they're either not familiar with it or they have some type of privacy concern that they're very worried about. So that's not only for genealogical purposes, but even more so for medical purposes. Many people are often very reluctant to release any sort of information like that, including their DNA. So there are some companies that do offer, for example, there's a company called 23andMe that does do a very rudimentary analysis of your DNA for medical reasons or medical purposes. For example, 23andMe will take your results and will look at your propensity for certain conditions, for example, such as certain types of cancer or your genetic reaction to certain types of drugs, your even physical traits, for example, it'll look at some of those things. So sometimes people who have no knowledge of their medical history, either because they don't know who their biological family is or because their biological family doesn't want to share this type of information, they'll take this 23andMe test to learn as much as they can about their medical history. Their propensity for certain types of conditions. Now, it's very rare that DNA is an end-all, be-all as far as medical conditions are concerned, but it's often a factor in your overall health, in addition to, of course, your health level in terms of environment and exercise, diet, things like that. So these individuals do want to add as much information as they can. But it's always helpful, or at least often helpful, to have a family member who's willing to share this type of information with you, in, at least to the degree that that will help your help you make informed decisions about your own medical care. So the DNA tests are often a very poor substitute for learning about family history, medical history from your biological relative. And so that's why it's often important to try to obtain that information from your biological family, if at all possible.
I absolutely agree, and I wanted to also, I wanted the public to know about how many generations laterally and up and down vertically we can look into to help an individual ascertain that information, because in three cases now, that's exactly what we've done when the immediate family wasn't cooperative or was unable because they had traveled too far or we didn't know where they were. We were able to find cousins, in fact, and we were able to find people, as I said, vertically, up and down and left and right, and that was quite helpful. Could you give us some information on that?
Well, I think it's really specific to the medical condition or the situation that you're looking at. So sometimes looking at more distant relatives won't be very helpful as far as medical reasons go. However, for other conditions, more distant relatives might be provide some type of information that could be helpful. Once you can start getting very distant, there's a very low likelihood that they can provide you with any useful information, but certainly your more immediate family could provide some very important health information that you may not be able to obtain from a DNA test alone. So again, it can sometimes be very beneficial to obtain family history from biological relatives.
Oh, absolutely. And like I said, we've had this issue at hand, well, three or four times that I can remember, and I'm sure several times before then. And I wanted to know, you have that website. Is that open to the public, that study, that genome study?
It is, yes.
How long have you been carrying that?
I've had that website for about, it will be 6 years this month, actually.
And can is it private, or can the public follow along?
No, it's publicly available at thegeneticgenealogist.com. And I provide information about DNA testing and about the use of DNA to learn more about yourself and about your family history.
Excellent. And we've come to the time when Dr. Bettinger has to excuse himself because he has other commitments. So we have other people that we need to talk to about genetics. And I can't thank you enough, and I want to welcome, of course, Paul Yates, CEO of DNA Spectrum, and, of course, our own Cassie. So I want everyone to say hello. We're all here.
Hello, hello.
Hello, Cassie. Paul, are you there? Paul Yates?
I am. Great to be here. Thanks.
Wonderful.
Thank you so much, Blaine.
Interesting. Blaine, I can't thank you enough. This has been so good to have you here this evening.
Well, thank you very much.
And we will have you back again when your time allows. We know that your schedule is tight. It's Valentine's Day. And I want you to go and enjoy a good evening with your family.
Well, thank you very much. You have a good evening as well.
Thank you
so much, Blaine.
Okay,
bye. We'll talk to you. Dr. Blaine Bettinger, and what an explanation. That was fantastic. And now we're going to hear from Mr. Paul Yates. Mr. Yates, I would like you to talk to us about your business, your company. Mr. Yates is the CEO to this wonderful organization, and give us an introduction. Tell us about your business, about this company.
Sure, Ruthie. So if you just heard, Dr. Bettinger was spot on in summing up how the personal genetics industry has been evolving over the last few years. If anyone's been following it, the Human Genome Project, which was the big multinational, multi-government project to map the entire human genome, only ended about 9 years ago. And since then, it's been coming straight to the consumer in increasingly better and better forms. One of the biggest problems, though, and as you might have understood, Dr. Bettinger is by far an expert in this, it takes a lot of footwork and a lot of knowledge, a lot of, in his case, PhDs and doctorates, to get to the bottom of some very simple personal questions that people have. Most of the clients that come to us at DNA Spectrum have a pretty basic question, and they want to know where they're from. You know, identity in the United States and around the world stems very heavily from where your family's from and where you're from. In many cases, it gets passed down to us through oral tradition, and we take on that role. In a lot of cases, those gates are either closed to us or they were never open or something's happened. So what DNA Spectrum does and what my company does is we try to give our clients the most simple, easy to understand, and very, very meaningful answers to what's really a complex question. So there are multiple different types of tests. As Dr. Bettinger just went in, there's that Y chromosome test, which is just for the men. There's the mitochondrial or MT DNA test, which is for men and for women, but doesn't work for the men's kids and gets confusing. Then recently they came out and there was larger developments in that third one that he mentioned, which is called autosomal DNA. Autosomal is just a fancy word for non-sex-linked, which just means doesn't matter what gender you are. And based upon that, and as we've been able to get more and more data, basically as the scientific community around the world has continued publishing studies on that, we came up and built DNA Spectrum from the ground up with the idea to give our clients one simple test that they can take and get easy-to-understand and meaningful answers to that question, where am I from? So that's what we've been doing now for a little over a year and a half since we first brought out to our clients, and we've helped thousands of people answer that question.
Yes, and we secretly went and got his product. So we're going to enjoy it and keep using it until one day we learn more about this, because we're not geneticists, but we certainly do enjoy participating in these mysteries, solving these mysteries. Now, Paul, how does your test work?
Sure. It's pretty simple, and again, that's the goal. All our clients do is they simply go to our website, DNAspectrum.com, where they call our 800 number and order with us. What we do is we then ship you out everything you need. So you don't have to show up, you don't have to take blood, you don't have to go see a doctor or anything like that. You'll receive everything you need through the mail, comes in tracked, and all you do is you simply take what is scientifically referred to as a buccal swab, but it's really just an oversized, sterile Q-tip. It's got fancy names and it does fancy stuff, but it looks pretty normal. You simply take that swab and rub it on the inside of your cheek, which does two things. It gets the slough off of your cheek cells, and it also gets a bit of saliva. Once you take that and put it back in our return envelope, you send it back to our lab, we do the rest of the work for you. We do all the analysis. Once we get it in our lab, it actually takes us 2 full days to chemically amplify, extract, and analyze your DNA. We run your specific genetic profile. So we find the values that make you, you. We don't run the full DNA, which is still a very expensive and very long-term product. Currently, it's still over $10,000 to full sequence one person's entire DNA. What we do is we sequence just the parts we're looking for, and those are the parts that we can then compare to scientific studies from around the world. These are from universities that are published from anywhere from Madrid, Spain, to Kyoto, Japan, all the way to Chicago, Illinois. They're everywhere. And what they do is they've contributed to this academic community, and we've taken that and then can compare your specific results to these results that are published by scientists from around the world and analyze and backtrack based on your DNA and people's historic migration where you're from. That's pretty much what we do and how we do it.
I was watching a program about a family who had a fire in their home, and an infant was taken, and they thought first they had lost the infant in the fire, only to find that actually one of the close neighbors had stolen the infant out of the crib and for years raised that infant and kept that infant. And everyone thought, how could it be? The child was stolen during the fire. When did it happen? How could it happen? And they realized that one of the windows was, in fact, open and that someone had come in, taken the child, and left. And for years, that woman raised that child, and the mother, at a party, recognized, looked in this child's eyes and said, "That's my baby." And literally got near the child to take hair from her head, plucked it right out of her head, and had it DNA tested. How does that work when people use hair? Tell us about that.
Sure, that's a great question. And it actually goes back to why this all started. There were sort of two groups that started doing genetic testing, right, that wanted to unlock the secrets of DNA. There was a scientific group, and that was the one that led that Human Genome Project. That's the project to map everything in there. And then there were other groups. One of the biggest ones was the Federal Bureau of Investigation in the United States. This was back in the late 80s. They wanted a way to identify people, and they came up with certain markers in your DNA. Instead of looking at the whole thing, they looked at these certain markers, and those way back in the day became a standard just because the FBI set that. Now when you take someone's hair, or if you take really almost any DNA, they call it nucleic DNA, any DNA from within the nucleus of a cell, whether it's in a blood cell, a hair follicle, saliva sample, skin sample, whenever you take that, they're going to compare these unique markers that are you and only you. So if you've ever heard some court testimony or watched court TV or seen a famous court case where the expert witness will come up and say, "I can testify within 99.999999%, you know, 1 in 10 billion people, the DNA we found at the crime scene matches the, you know, the guy we think that did it." Well, that's exactly what they're using for these paternity events, and for what case you were referring to, the exact same type of thing. They're going to take and look at the exact unique profile that made that child that child. Well, the DNA could only come from two places. One half would come from the mother, and one half comes from the father. So if one half matches exactly to the mother, you've got a maternal connection.
In that particular case, the child actually, of course, matched the couple, the husband and wife, and she too was one of those families in with a problem like this that didn't have thousands of dollars and went to a politician and said, "That's my baby. I know it for certain." And the politician actually took the hair sample and had it tested. I forget who he took it to, and I think it was the FBI. But that, by the way, I'm saying I saw it on television. It's true, but it was based on a true story. And it fascinates me. What happens with old hair? For instance, when people romantically would take a curl, someone's, you know, a baby's curl, and cut it and put it in a locket. Can that old hair be tested?
Sure, that's a great question. And unfortunately, I've got to say here, in this case, I don't know. Our head of our laboratory, he's the one that extracts it. He's the one that can tell us for sure. He could even give you the chemicals and the lab kits that he would use to do that. So I will tell you this, the laboratory that we use, we also share with a number of other people. It's one of the top ISO 17025 rated, you know, one of the highest rated laboratories in the country. They do work for other government agencies. They can take bones that have been in the desert for 50 years and analyze them and pull the DNA profiles from them. So my guess is if they can do that, they could take a locket of hair that's been stored really well.
Hair to me is specific, and I'll tell you why. Because when people love someone, you know, when people love a child, and, "Oh, he's got curly hair, and I've got to cut his hair," and they put it in a locket. I know because I did it. My son had curly hair when he was a baby, and then it became very straight as he got older. But I loved the curls, and I took one of those curls, and I was watching, again, another movie based on a family where someone was very much in love with the grandmother and very much in love with the great grandmother, and they used to, as a practice, it was in the state of Virginia, as a practice, cut a little curl of hair and put it in the locket, and then the next generation would carry the beloved locket with the family's hair in it. And they used that old hair, and I thought, that can't be true. That hair's got to be, 200 years old. That's impossible. And it turned out that, yes, the hair is something that's usable. I just didn't know, I wanted to know from you. But I know you're...
Absolutely, absolutely. No, and how we pass down legacy is really important. Self-identity, legacy, and the ideas that we have of our family are very important. I can't tell you how many clients have come and said, I have a grandparent or I have a parent that is definitely getting on in age and won't be with us forever. It's not a fun truth. It's just the way it is. And the grandparent, one of the things they really wanted to do was get this DNA test done with us with DNA Spectrum so that they can say, look, here's what I'm leaving behind. I want my kids. I want my grandkids. I want my great-grandkids to know, not just through the family stories and pictures, who I was and what I was, but to leave behind the actual, genetic copy of my legacy. Here's who I am. Here's where I came from. And it's really nice. It's great when we can help out families like that.
I remember when I was doing a story about stallions and got to speak to people who handled the semen and handled the breeding and were dealing with these horses that were worth millions. And the gentleman showed up in New York to do the story, and my goodness, he had trace samples of all these stallions, and they have it in a conservatory, and they actually come in, they test it before they purchase the stallion. It was fascinating, and I thought, why don't we do that with people?
Well, hopefully we're not doing any purchasing of people, but I will tell you that stallions and horses and dogs are the only other two animals that have really come into their own along with the study of human DNA. And it's funny that this study of where am I from, what's my ancestry as a person, someone had thought, I'm really interested in where my dog came from, what breed he is, or I'm really interested in what breed this horse is and where its lineage goes back. And if you know anything about racehorses, who the parents were of racehorses is what makes all the difference. We're talking the difference between a $2,000 horse and a $200,000 horse.
Oh, absolutely. And that's so important because it's a product, but it's even more important in human beings when for all these other emotional, sentimental, and medical reasons. Absolutely. And
exactly.
I wanted to also ask you, well, people, exactly what are they looking for? Are they looking for genetic information, or is it sentimentality, or is it both?
It's a lot of different things that people come to us at DNA Spectrum for. The biggest thing people come from, like I said in the beginning, is they want to know where they're from. Most of our clients fall into the category where they know a bit about where they're from. They might even identify themselves as, my mom's mom was Italian. We were raised Italian, so I'm just going to call myself Italian. The big advantage is here, at least in the United States, we're pretty much all a country of immigrants.
yes.
So self-identity has got a lot to do with it, and a lot of people know a bit about where they come from. But many people either know nothing about where they came from, and that's either because of adoption, what we refer to as a paternity event, which is an unknown event that happened, or simply, they didn't find out from their parents for whatever reasons it is. Other people will do the research themselves. For instance, Dr. Benzer was saying he's got into this because he did a lot of the actual physical paper research, looking up records, marriage certificates, birth certificates, tracing names. But you can hit a lot of dead ends that way. And our test works for everybody who either hit a dead end or just wants to know, real simple, real easy, where they're from, where their ancestors are from, how they've migrated around the world. And
find
some interesting things.
I have to ask you, did you test yourself?
Oh, of course I did. That was one of the first things we did back a while ago when we were doing it. Well, I found, about 80% of my results were exactly what I had been told, turns out my father had done a very good job doing the paper research, extrapolating backwards. And so about 80% of it was there. The connections to England were there. My connections to the Jewish populations that were in, you know, South Germany and Austria were all there. There was a little bit of American Indian connection. But then about 20% was a little bit off. It was not something that I knew about. I ended up having my sister tested, my dad. We went through everyone, and it was consistent throughout. So, you know, and that seems to be actually pretty common in there. Most people have a pretty good idea of where they're from, and they get the majority of it there. But because of the amount of detail that we give at DNA Spectrum, you know, you can choose to delve down as deep as you like. If you delve down deep enough, going back to over 10 generations, that's all your mothers and fathers, all four grandparents, all eight grandparents, or sorry, all eight great-grandparents, you know, 16 great-great-great-grandparents. It gets pretty large pretty quick. Eventually, you're going to find a track or a portion that you didn't know about. And that was really exciting for me.
I thought so, too. I did it as well. And my next question is, the public, to get your product, give us the story. Give us the website. What are we talking about? And price point, is it affordable? We're not talking about the thousands anymore, are we?
No, that's a really good point. So when we first started, these tests were in the thousands of dollars. If you go back over 8 or 9 years, they were in the tens of thousands of dollars.
Correct.
DNA Spectrum was started because we found a way to take the newest lab equipment, the newest portions, and do it on a large scale. So we've got some of the lowest prices around. And we also have variable pricing starting at a very low amount. But the bottom line for any of the listeners out there, it's a great deal. All they have to do is go to DNAspectrum.com. That's just like it sounds, all one word, DNAspectrum.com. Or they can give us a call at our toll-free number, 1-800-471-6164. So they can ask questions to our operators and put questions into our operators and even order over the phone if they don't have internet connection.
I enjoyed going through your website and listening to the stories on those little videos. They were so touching.
Yeah, those were some of our first clients right when we started out, and we gave them the opportunity. We said, you know what, if they wrote into us and said that getting their results was really meaningful, we said, you know what, we should film you guys and get everyone together so we can get you out to show to other people. One of the most powerful people in there, actually it was two ladies, was both women, and if you take a look at the videos on our website, DNAspectrum.com, you'll be able to see them. All you have to do is go there, and you can see it's...
Tell us their story. Tell us their story. What happened?
Sure. They're actually both adopted, and it's a mother and daughter. They're all young enough to almost look like sisters, but they're both adopted. They found out both once they were both adults that they're adopted and reconnected with each other. Neither of them had any idea at all about either of their parents and where they came from. It was we actually gave them the results on camera and got a chance for them to go over it together. It was pretty moving. Not a dry tear or a dry eye in the house.
Okay. I was very moved by it, but I'll tell you, either lightning or whatever, could you just repeat that only because it was a little garbled in the recording as you were speaking. Could you tell us again about that, the mother and daughter?
Oh, sure. I apologize about that. I was just saying...
No, it's not your
mother...
fault. It could be anything. It could be lightning. It could be anything. It's okay.
Lightning in South Beach. That's a pretty common thing. Sure. So the two women towards the end of the video, they're actually both adopted, but they are the biological, that's the mother and her daughter. But both of them were adopted. So both of them, and they didn't connect with each other till the daughter, who's there in her young 20s, was an adult. And neither of them, throughout their entire lives, knew a single thing about where they were from. So if you think about, for your own personal situation, someone asks you, where are you from? What are you? You know, you might know the answer. These women had grown up their entire lives, one, not knowing each other, and two, not knowing where they were from, identity-wise. So we gave them their results on camera at the same time. They got a little choked up. And
oh,
there was
very,
not, as I
very.
Said, not a dry eye in the house.
I was moved, and I was thinking, this is a product that I need. In fact, it was I would say those videos that prompted me when I needed to ascertain to a really, really close number. That's why I started buying right on the website. Anyone can buy these tests on your website, correct?
Correct. All you have to do is go there, and you can order directly from the website, or you can give us a call, as I said, through the 800 number. We have people that grandparents buying them for themselves and then buying kits for their grandkids as well as soon as they're born. We have parents that get them for each other and also one for their kids so they can see what they've passed down to their kids and what their other spouse, what their husband or their wife has passed down. It can be quite a bit of fun. Either way, the costs are a lot lower than they used to be. They're now, they started under $100, and depending on how much detail you want, whether you want basic questions answered or you want the full boat, we're able to provide that at the best rates out there.
Now, Paul, I have a question. It's Cassandra here. I just had
a question. Raise your voice a little, Cassie. Raise your voice a little.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, but
Paul?
Much better.
We got
I have a question for you because it's actually coming up a couple of times on my screen now right now. Can you test anonymously, and if so, what are the steps to take to test anonymously? Like
sure,
that's high
a really
profile
good
cases
question.
Similar to mine.
Yeah, that's a great question. So if and you might get into this a little bit more when we have a little bit more time to talk about your specific case, Sandra, but there's basically the physical testing of the DNA is the same for both, but there's what's called a chain of custody or a legal chain of custody. That's where someone would go out, sample you, take your DNA, if you're the person they're testing. They have to testify, basically, and be certified that they can take the DNA. And your DNA is followed all the way through the chain of it being transferred to from that person who took it, being the transported, taken to the laboratory. It has to be a certified laboratory to go through. Though we obey those, we specifically do not follow chain of custody. And that's to protect the privacy of our clients.
Right.
So we don't ask for any information from you. You can send us any sample you want. You could write John Doe on it if you chose.
Right.
We leave the power of that to our clients. What they do with the results is up to them.
Excellent, excellent. So that's actually coming up across a couple of times I've been asked that question here online.
Okay, and the next thing I wanted to know is, how did you get into this business anyway?
It's a bit of a funny story. If you remember in the beginning, I said my father had done a fair amount of delving into our family's past. He had started to pioneer portions of that. I was actually in a completely unrelated field in finance and managing some other companies. He and some other people ended up, we were all sitting around the dinner table going over some initial results on the hobby portion that he had started with it. And it came together with, you know, if we can do this, other people would really want this. And from that conversation and that dinner with all five of us sitting around the dinner table, myself, my friends, my family, I got so excited in that I quit my regular job and went full bore into DNA Spectrum. It was a little rash. It was a little rash, and it did take me about 6 months to finally wrap up everything I had been doing in my previous finance job, but this has been so much more rewarding for everything from working with our scientists and our development team to working with our clients that come through the door and help us get better and seeing the difference that it makes in their lives when they can say, look, you have answered a question I really wanted to know. You've answered it with certainty, and you made it easy to understand.
And I'm sure we're going to have you back to discuss this with other families, and many families want this information, and I'm sure we're going to be calling on Paul Yates to bring his DNA Spectrum company back to syndicated news often on other cases. Wouldn't you agree?
I would love to come back whenever you ask me. It's been a pleasure to be on here, and I really appreciate it.
I can't thank you enough, and we'll say goodnight, everyone, to Mr. Paul Yates. He's the CEO of DNA Spectrum on Valentine's Day. He took the time, like as did Dr. Blaine Bessinger, to spend this time with us and answer these questions. I can't thank you enough. This is a romantic day, the day of the heart. Anyway, thank you, Mr. Yates, for spending the time with us, and we're very grateful to you.
You're welcome, and have a wonderful Valentine's Day, and I wish a wonderful Valentine's Day to all of our listeners out there. Take care.
Thank you so much, Paul.
And thank you, Paul. Valentine's Day to your family as well.
Appreciate it. I'll pass it on. Bye-bye.
Okay, good night.
Good night.
And now we have Vito Colucci of Colucci Private Investigators. Vito, are you with us?
Yes, I am. Good evening, ladies.
Hi.
Welcome. So nice to have you here. Hasn't it been a fascinating evening?
Oh, I've been listening, and he was very good. I really enjoyed Paul Yates. He explained a lot of things. Your guests, both your guests are tremendous.
Dr. Bettinger first, who's got a doctorate in genetics, and he's also an attorney and the CEO of DNA Spectrum. I can't imagine people more qualified to discuss this rather than people who are making suppositions. I wanted to have people who are working in this industry, who know this industry, to talk
right.
about it. And your area is also very important because you deal with the private investigative part of these cases.
That's
and
right,
I know
right.
that you were assigned to Cassie's case, weren't you?
Yes, I was. I met her several years ago. We became friends, and it's been a great relationship.
Absolutely.
Oh, and now we have you here with us. We're so happy to have you. I want to make the announcement. Here's the announcement. We're very happy that Vito Colucci has such a wonderful background in not only investigative work, but because of the investigative work is why he began to study and learn about genetics and all these other aspects of finding families and family members and things of that nature. And he's worked, I don't know, 10 years on Cassie's case since he's
it
known her?
It seems to be that sometimes. No, it's been a nice relationship. But what you're saying about DNA is really very truthful, because I always explain it being a foot soldier, so to speak, as a cop, you know, a cop on the beat, a guy knocking on doors, asking questions. It's the marriage between good investigative work and science. And that's a real happy marriage, because you have to have both. You have to have the detective style of interviewing numerous people, and you put that together with the modern science, and it's unbeatable as you go to a court of law.
And I was noticing you have a new book out. Tell us about this book.
Yeah, the book came out about a month ago. It has all of a sudden, I mean, it's taken off tremendously. The book is called Rogue Town, R-O-G-U-E.
And
basically,
up the front page of syndicatednews.net.
Oh, okay. Basically, what the book is, it's the true story of a city under the stranglehold of organized crime, which means the officials who betrayed the public trust and the cop, that was me, who wore a wire to help bring them down. It's a little bit of everything. It's a whole town that succumbed to organized crime and the corrupt officials. And through the police department, I investigated my own bosses, which helped to lead to my lieutenant being indicted for murder. My lieutenant and my sergeant were running the biggest narcotics and organized crime ring in all of a whole big county, Fairfield County, Connecticut, which encompasses a lot of different cities.
Wow.
And the another bonus to the book is a cub reporter, a brand new reporter at that time, came on board for the newspaper. His name is Anthony Dolan. He wrote about 80 articles encompassing all this corruption in the town. He went on to win a Pulitzer for that. For all his articles, he won a Pulitzer. So the people reading the book, they're going to be reading stories and bits about my life that won this man a Pulitzer. So it's a very interesting book. He was then called by Ronald Reagan in 1980. Reagan found out about him winning a Pulitzer and his writing ability, and he became the chief speechwriter for 8 years for Ronald Reagan, and then also served with the two Bushes administration. So, I mean, he's very, very busy still. I talk to him all the time. He helped me tremendously put together the book, and it has taken off, and I feel so blessed by it.
You co-wrote the book, didn't you?
Yes, I did. I co-wrote the book with a fellow by the name of Denny Griffith, who's already had 12 true crime books out. Many bestsellers out of those, and I was very fortunate. He loved the story. He jumped in. The two of us wrote it, and it came out about January 5th on my birthday.
Oh, I love that. That's
my
that's
39th birthday, by the way, Cassandra. My 39th. Yeah, you keep laughing.
Okay.
Keep laughing. All right, keep laughing.
What are your most? I would say gripping stories, cases. Tell us. Give us just a smatter of a few of them.
Well, there's been so many. It's a lot of high-profile cases. The book talks about a shootout that I was in with my partner and my lieutenant. A couple of bad guys escaped from Arizona prison, and they were going across the country raping people and doing horrible things to them. And we cornered them in New York State, and shootout encompassed. And thank God, three of us walked away without a scratch, and one bad guy lay dead, and another was wounded. It's not something you're proud of or happy.
Where in New York? Where in New York?
Pardon me?
Where in New York?
Rye, New York. Rye, New York, which is a little bit over the Connecticut line.
I know right where that is.
Yep. Probably a half a mile from an amusement park called the Playland, which is over in that area there. So that was that. But then it got into, like I said, all this corruption and death threats and, you know, I mean, it was just a horrible, horrible many, many years that I was involved in that stuff, as well as Anthony Dolan being, you know, his life was threatened on a daily basis. But as far as my work, too, I mean, I worked a big priest case in Connecticut where we got a priest arrested for robbing basically close to $2 million worth of money from his parish. And, you know, he was convicted and went to jail on that. And, you know, he was spending it on his boyfriend, a lot of the money. And the church was going broke. And, you know, it was an interesting case because it's so different from the murder and the other things that I do. It was a lot of looking at Amex bills and putting it all together and finding the Toomey luggage that he bought and the limousine rides and the liquor bill. So you had to put it all together, all under his own name, and interviewing the stores and everybody else that said, oh, yes, that's Father Michael Faye Jew, he came in all the time. And he did this, he bought that, and the whole bit of furniture at Ethan Allen. And it was
a
very interesting case. That's not in this book. That's in my first book, Inside the Private Eyes of a PI, because I talk about all my cases.
We're going to have to go get that
cases.
Book as well.
Oh, yeah. That talks about many, many cases in there, the Michael Skakel, Martha Moxley case I was involved in, and just a lot
that
of things about how the PI business is
Tell us about the
going.
Martha Skakel. That's a fascinating story.
Yeah, it was the number one story
for several years with
the Associated Press.
Who hired you?
I was hired by, in my business, I could work on a case for the defense side, and there's many other times where I work for the family, more the, let's say, the police side. On that case, I worked for the defense side because I do believe in the case. I still do now. They always say in my line of work, whether you're a cop, which I was, or a private detective, when you go through your whole 30 to 40 year career, there's always one case, and this is noted from anybody that's worked, there's always one case that you think about that did not go the right way, that should have went a different way. And that case for me, that's my one. That's, you know, many cops will say, yeah, I worked this rape case. It just didn't go the way it was supposed to go. And so, you know, everybody can account on that end. But it's a lot of interesting things. And, of course, meeting Cassie was great, too. Very interesting case. Before I take any case, I look into it. I want to make sure I want to get involved in it. I want to believe in the case. And I did all that with Cassie. And, you know, when she first came to me, she had proof. We added to that. And here we are now. And
a nice lady to deal with. I know. She's a doll. It's been a lot of fun for us as well. And my next question is, these cases with DNA and the travel, are you traveling all over the nation trying to piece these cases together?
Well, sometimes you do. I mean, there's many Connecticut cases that branch out. Like with the Skakel case, we had to interview a fella down in Miami, Florida. We had to go to Chicago. We had to go numerous my associate who works for me had to go to a state of Washington. So, you know, all over the place, down south. So many cases that originate in Stamford send you out to different locations to just take a statement or do something of that nature. So you never know. You never know. Connecticut's an interesting state here for big cases. I did the one, I don't know if you're familiar. I worked for the victim on this case, the lady that was mauled by the chimpanzee. It was featured on the Oprah show. Had
Talk to me about
off.
That. Yes, I remember that. What happened?
Yeah, that was a couple years ago. We worked for the victim on that. We had to do a lot of interviews. That was right in Connecticut, right in Stamford, Connecticut.
Now, my question is, why did she need a detective? Wasn't it obvious?
What do you mean, obvious, about having
what
a chimpanzee?
Well,
of course, because what I learned after the case was done, and appearing on many TV shows, and appearing on the show with animal experts, okay, which I really enjoyed learning, okay, they would be on and I would listen to them, and they would say what people need to understand, people have this notion that you could take a chimpanzee or some other big animal and have it in your house with them. But he has explained how chimpanzees work. They're fine. You could hug and cuddle them for about 10 years or so, but when they get to puberty, they have to fight and kill their father, their uncle, whoever. It's a normal trait for them in the wild where they have to do that stuff. And see, Travis the chimp, on my case, had gotten to that point where this lady who he had known for many years that was the assistant to the owner of the chimp went over like she would go every day, got out of her vehicle, and Travis at this point looked at her and said, I'm a man now, let's say, and went at her and showed her who's boss. You see, when I watch these shows, ladies, I shake my head. People with boa constrictors, or they're hugging the lions that they keep, and it's like these are called animals, ladies and gentlemen. Something's always going to happen, and it just gets me aggravated to watch these, and they don't learn. A chimpanzee is a wild animal once it grows up to a certain age. It has to kill other animals in the wild. It has to kill other chimpanzees, you know, and that's what Travis did this day.
That's
he had
nature.
To show this late. That's nature, right. But these are not animals you keep, folks. These are animals that you watch from a distance and, you know, whatever it may be. So that was a very interesting case because I, you know, went on and did a lot of research on Sandra Harold, who was the owner of the chimp, and just whole background on this chimp and everything. But there's been so many because what I love about the business is that each case is different. One may be a case like this, the chimpanzee. One may be a scapegoat. One may be a rape, murders, whatever. You know, divorces. I do a lot of divorce cases. We're here on St. Valentine's Day. That's the busiest 2 years of the whole year for private detectives. The day before Valentine's Day.
He was really spending Valentine's Day when he says he's working late, huh?
Yeah, the day before Valentine's Day is called in our business Valentine's Day, because that's when the husband takes out the girlfriend, because he can't take the girlfriend out on Valentine's Day. He's got to keep the home fires burning that day. So that's the day where a lot of cheating goes on and everything else. So in our business, it's called Valentine's Day, the day before.
Wow.
Yeah. It's a sad commentary on life, that's for sure.
It didn't even occur to me. My goodness sake.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I've done many, many times I get a call around this time each year from a TV station or the press that want to interview me as a private detective. Tell us a little bit about Valentine's Day. Are you busy? What goes on there? And you tell the people some of the horror stories that you had in the past, you know?
My goodness sake.
Sometime when we have more time, I'll tell you a quick little story, one of the funniest ones that I saw on a Valentine's Day. Very interesting one. But there's so
okay,
many
and now we're going to take a little break so that we can talk about, we're going to continue this conversation in a few minutes. We're going to take a little break, and we're going to listen to John McEwen's Gypsy Nights, and then we're going to be talking about, we're going to continue talking with another fun guest that we're waiting for that will be here in a few minutes. But in the meanwhile, I want you to know that John McEwen is, I think he's working in the bamboo room tonight. And go to johnmcewen.com to see where he's going to be playing tomorrow night, because that's going to be quite enjoyable today. It's going to be tonight he's working in one part of Florida, and tomorrow night he's going to be performing in another. So go to johnmcewen.com to read where it is, and it starts music when you get to that website. And I'm going to give you a little bit of Gypsy Nights right here. And give us 1 second, and we'll be back in a few minutes. And here we go.
Thank you.
that was wonderful. I love that sound. Wasn't that great? That's the Gypsy Nights by John McEwen. John McEwen is the CEO of Syndicated News, in case you were wondering. He is the CEO here. And remember, keep your pages down, because if you turn them on, they'll echo into the room. They'll echo back into the studio, okay? Now, Vito, tell me about the origins. Did you go directly from being a police officer to a private agency, or did you have both at the same time?
No, no. I was a cop first. You can't do both at the same time in most states.
I know many police officers who are doing police work while they're doing detective work because, oh,
yes,
it's not my agency, it's my brother's.
Yeah, the states are kind of split on that. You have some states where if you're a cop, you could work on the side and do private detective work, as long as it, you know, you can't interfere with a police case. Like, you can't work against the police if you're a private detective. If you're still a cop. Then there's other states that say, no, if you're a cop, you cannot be involved in private detective work. So it's all, the laws are always changing on that end. I took a little while in between because it's back then it was a hard license to get. It still is. It's a very hard license, and you have to go through your normal waiting time. And then I became a private detective back in the 1980s, and I've loved it. It's an interesting job. So I've had 25 years on that.
25 years is a long time. You had a full career.
Yes, yep, yep. That's right.
That was a full career. And what other areas of investigative work did you do? Is it always with individuals, or do you work for corporations as well?
No, we could work for an insurance company on something like a slip and fall, or somebody hurts their back, or say they hurt their back, or they say, oh, my arm, I can't raise my arm more than just a little bit away from my side, and we follow them, and they're playing tennis and hitting the shots over their head, or they're throwing a ball with their hand above their head, throwing a ball or stuff like that. So, I mean, a lot of people are very truthful with what they say, but we go out there for the insurance company before they give the person a couple $100,000. We go out and see if they do have use of that arm or that leg or whatever. A lot of times people show up in court on crutches and they can hardly move, and then you see them running track. And they think nobody's watching them, or something of that nature. So,
or a neck brace, and they're wheeled into the courtroom.
Right, right, and yeah.
I saw a fellow wheeled into the courtroom at Brooklyn Federal, and the next thing I know, they have film of him playing tennis at Forest Hills in Queens.
Yeah, oh yeah, yeah. People right in the court say, I can't lift my arm any farther than this. And they just go a couple inches of lifting their hand up. And then we followed somebody. We watched somebody the day after 4th of July cleaning up his yard from a party the day before. And he was picking up all the steak bones and throwing them to his German shepherds way over his head, like tossing them from his hand, which was well above his head, and throwing the steak bones. So, you know,
he was pitching.
Yeah, I mean, if you're rightfully, hey, we found many people too that were rightfully injured. That all the times and weeks and everything that we did follow them from a long distance or whatever, they're really hurt, and that's fine. They deserve every penny. Let me just say that I'm not out there to catch somebody. I'm out to report back to the lawyer or the insurance company or whoever hires me. The actions of that individual. Sometimes it verifies that the person is truly injured, and then the insurance company then will try to make a settlement more quicker. But other times where we got the individual on film showing that there's nothing wrong with him, then they play hardball with the individual and the individual's lawyer. So we're out there to just, we have no horse in the race, so to speak. We go out, we do our stuff, we turn over all of our work to the lawyer or to the insurance company, and then they do the rest.
And here's another,
I have
a question with respect to,
certainly,
Vito, what's your take or your insight with respect to Have people ever hired you for forensics, like computers or Facebook posts, Twitter posts, and to investigate who posts those sorts of things and, you know, email origination and that sort of stuff?
Oh, yeah. We've opened up our own little forensic lab at the University of Bridgeport. Really, my partner, Al Dressler, runs that. He's the forensic guy. I'm more the investigative guy. But we opened that up, and that encompasses doing what's called sweeps, let's say debugging of a house to see if anybody has your cell phone bugged, your computer bugged, your vehicle bugged. And it's machinery that Al brings in that shows a frequency if there is any transmissions going on, any bugs that are in that or not. So we do a lot of that stuff. That's a cutting-edge thing. But it's a little bit of everything. There's so many things that's utilized now in court cases, something as simple as an easy pass. That's probably more of an East Coast term for the thing that you put up that instantly pays your toll. I guess it's called other things across the country, I've heard. But what happens now is an individual that tells a police officer, hey, what are you doing on this night? Oh, I went to Connecticut. I drove from New York to Connecticut. I just went to talk and watch something. I went to the casino in Connecticut or whatever it may be. And they get the easy pass and they see at those same exact hours he went to Atlantic City, New Jersey, the total opposite way that he used his easy pass there. And he took his girlfriend there or whatever may have happened. And some crime was committed and now he's lying. So I mean, there's so many different things, even something as simple as an easy pass that people forget about, that can be checked, you know. But we do a lot. We do a lot of sweeps, debugging, all things of that nature. And it's a new part of the business, something
right.
that was not there 20, 25 years ago when I started out.
Right.
It didn't exist. That didn't
nope.
exist. And now the forensics, I noticed when they were looking at people who had written things on Facebook and on
mm-hmm.
or using
yeah.
Twitter or using any type of electronic method, that didn't exist then. And
no.
now you can do a full forensic case. I was watching a comedy by Chris Rock, and he was saying, you don't know that you're in love until you've watched a whole program of CSI to work out your alibi. And I was thinking, oh, my gosh.
Another
it's
thing, too.
Funny, but
another
it's so true.
When I started in the 1980s, 87, 88, video surveillance was brand new, okay? You had these giant video cameras, if you could remember that, when you wanted to film your family or whatever, the real big ones that first came out back then. You put it on your shoulder and you film people. Well, back then, you know, video surveillance was brand new. So we had a van with the darkened windows. Because you know the cameras were so big, and we take the middle seat out of the minivan, and just so able to move around in the minivan to take all the pictures that way from a distance. Nowadays, we have a baseball cap or other items like that that has a little pinhole with a Sony camera inside there that you can stand at the bar, just face the subjects, and record them all on film. Your belt buckle, your pen that you have in your pocket, the little tiny pinhole is filming everybody while they're going about their business. So it's changed for the better, obviously, because you could be right next to the person now and, you know, no camera visible at all. And just, like I said, had your baseball cap on, and that's filming the subject in a corner booth with the girlfriend hugging and kissing them on cases like that.
I saw a whole TV show about that, and it was kind of funny when they announced that they would be having the show Cheaters on, and boy, that
oh, yeah.
became quite the popular program.
It did. The only problem with a show like Cheaters, all the private detectives that I know across the country, I mean, the thing that makes Cheaters interesting is one thing that we would never do, the other private detectives. They bring the people to the scene, blah, 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 and you see them fighting. That's not what you're supposed to do in a private detective thing. When our clients ask us if they can come along, we tell them no. And most private detectives
absolutely
will
not.
Say. Because
correct.
You don't want an altercation, and eventually somebody's going to get stabbed or shot or something of that nature. I mean, you know, Cheaters has to do that because that's the whole premise of their show, is when Mrs. Smith goes and confronts Mary Brown. while they're in the car parked with her husband. And they, you know, they pull hair and blah, 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 and, you know. But, hey, that's their niche, and it's fine. That's their show. But, you know, we don't do things of that nature. Our client asks, hey, can I come with you? No, we don't allow anybody to come with us to confront your husband at the hotel room as we get them coming out of the hotel, him and his girlfriend. No. We'll tell you the room they're in, what they did, and the whole bit. And that's how any real good private detective will work.
A serious detective like yourself.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's the right way to do it. I mean, TV is fine. I mean, they have a TV show, and it's, you know, it's been on for a long time, and people love to watch it. So, I mean, who am I to say? You know, that's their way how they do things.
Well, I can talk about something that's been a real annoyance to me. There is a nastiness and a negative manner in which producers for television, even internet and internet radio and radio shows, there's a certain nastiness and anger and just a terrible behavior that they're using in order to lift ratings. And they're doing it by ruining people, by hurting their feelings, by embarrassing them and putting them in terrible positions. And I have to say, the HBO programs where they're taking, and I was just talking to someone that I met today, a wonderful person, and I met that individual, and we were just talking about that these producers, they'll take one of the people on the cast and say, now, what you do is you say that you know that she was sleeping with the milkman. All right. And we'll give you another $15,000 for that. So now this person and the cast member is ready to do it, and the other individual doesn't know that they're going to do that. So that look of horror and surprise, that's real, because they weren't in on it. And a couple years ago, I forget the name of the show, a kid went and killed somebody over something like that. Mm-hmm. And people have killed themselves, committed suicide. And I'm telling you, as producers, we have to be very careful and respectful and not take, and I'm talking again about paparazzi. When they're chasing someone like Bieber, Bieber's a teenager. He's a kid, and he likes to race his car. So when you chase him, he's going to step on it, and he'll be racing at 140 miles an hour. And he can kill himself or someone else.
I'm involved in a lot of those shows. I had I was in a 14-part show for A&E called Blood Work that ran a year and a half. That was a very good show. You didn't have none of that garbage, and it was all cases that were solved with hard work and forensic. But, you know, you look at the lineup now. It's all pushing the envelope. Honey Boo Boo or whatever that girl's name is. I mean, you know, people love that stuff. You know, all this other stuff.
They're basically
the more you can push the envelope, the more nasty that you could be or whatever. That, unfortunately, though, you see, you have to understand what happens. A lot of the reality shows only last 2 or 3 weeks, and they're very quietly taken off their list because if nobody watches them, if there's nothing to tickle them, the audience, they're taken off. I mean, the reality shows are knocked out.
I've seen several come on and be gone in a month or so. I've seen that.
I mean, look how long Snooki lasts. You know, the whole premise of the show is Snooki looking for Nooki. And that lasted for several years. I mean, you know, that's
I'm going to go work with a guest, and you two continue the show.
Hang on,
Vito,
I wanted to ask you real quick, what is your take, because I know that you've done this, and you've had to have done this with blood work on your show. How does it work when you do, have you done any, like, real-life CSI sort of stuff to obtain DNA, such as, you know, I don't know. I mean, I don't know how they really
Case. Even doing the things like your last guest was talking about, the hair follicles and things of that nature, and having it tested, sweat from a brow, you know, I mean, all kinds of stuff out there. This is all, like, new things. I mean, CSI, I mean, my partner Al goes many times, Cassie, to the Las Vegas trade shows every year where they have, you know, all the new CSI and products and everything else. And, you know, you could go 1 year in May and go back the next year in May, and it's all new stuff. the things you saw last May, not that they're obsolete, but there's all new things to replace them now. That's how quick it's all changing out there.
Sure.
It's amazing. It's just amazing. But it's for the good. It helps the good guys, you know, because the bad guys are always studying what the new things are, and they try to find ways to beat it. So the good guys, the feds and the cops and everybody else, and investigators like myself, you have to catch up on all these things because the other side is doing their homework too.
Right, right. Now, when now with blood work, I mean, what type of cases did they? Now they were real life crime cases.
Yeah. What they would do is they take a case, maybe a 1 year old case or a 5 year old case, and cases that were solved, you know, forensically.
Sure.
One case that I talked about was a murder in an apartment, and for some reason the police started looking in the sink. They found a little trace evidence of a blood dot there, so they took apart the whole sink, you know, all the pipes and everything else, and they found a lot of evidence in that. That's basically, you know, good. Oh, that's that combination I told you about.
Oh,
good,
sure,
old-fashioned,
sure,
police work meeting science, because
right,
the old-fashioned police work was taking it all apart and finding the stuff and then having science say, aha, that blood comes back to Cassandra. Look at that. You
yeah
know, things of that nature. So, I mean, it was all good cases like that. Bones of a dead person that may have been 10 years old are now
wow
back uncovered. You're digging them up.
Absolutely.
You know, they're looking at the, you know, anything from the former teeth that was in there to samples of this, bone tissue, everything. I mean, just all cases that were very, very interesting to watch them being solved.
Now, we leave DNA practically anywhere and everywhere, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we do, yeah. That's why it's very strange sometimes when you have somebody that murders somebody, especially something like a stabbing thing, where the person is sitting over the victim and stabbing them, like you hear a lot of times, 25, 30
yeah
times. Because, number one, that's going to leave some marks on you as the bad person, as the
sure
stabber. Okay, I mean, you're going to be sweating, your adrenaline's going to be running, you know, it's going to be things of that nature that's going to fall on the subject or on the floor. One little
your hair
strand of hair. Yes, I was
mm-hmm
going to say, just one strand of hair. I mean, we don't realize as we walk around how we lose a hair here or a hair there. We don't see them many
right
times. And not only that, how the person can even get away without even one little tiny speck of a bloody footprint. When
sure
you got, when you're doing that, and you know, I'm not trying to get graphic with the audience
right
here,
right,
but
right
you know, the whole you got a whole big gigantic puddle of blood all around
mm
the victim, and now you have to try to step over it or around it or whatever, and so you know that's been invaluable to find
right
that one little strand of hair there that comes back to Joe Smith, and then you put your case together, and Joe Smith winds up being charged with the murder.
Sure,
we didn't have
sure
that stuff years ago. You know,
right,
you had to try to find fingerprints years ago or the bloody footprint where you could, you know, figure out what size shoes or sneakers that subject had, things of that nature. But now it's just oh, please, God, let me find just a strand of hair or something here.
Sure.
And, you know.
Sure. Now, like, in cases like mine, what would be a protocol? Because I know there's going to be a lot of people listening as to how I went about, obviously, obtaining just gathering of all my data and then whatever it is that, you know, we move forward with, and at the end of the show we'll reveal a little bit more about my stuff. But how is it that, like, what would be your protocol if you had, like, let's say Jane Doe comes to you and says, I have a case similar to Cassandra's?
A case like yours, you're saying?
Yeah, like mine,
yeah.
Or someone who's looking for their family.
So we were thinking we're just going to be sending them in your direction.
Yeah.
Okay, I didn't catch that. I got a little blocked out on that. A case that would what again?
Cases that are similar to Cassie's, and they're going to need help channeling them right over to you.
Well, what happens in those type of cases, okay, being involved in them before, you know, you first of all, you have to prepare. On our side, let's call it our side, even though there's
yeah
many other cases, okay? You
yeah
can't, you know, the people that some of the other people that have gone in the paper randomly just said, oh, yes, this is this, and they have no proof to back it up or anything like that.
Right.
And what happens with the subject, whether it's a big, let's say it's a big basketball star or something, I mean, you know, in the course of a year, we don't hear them all, but let's say in the course of the year, that fellow's about 8 times, let's say, that somebody's come forward and said, oh, we had one night together, and this is his little kid now, and this is that, and the whole thing. And it has to come to the point, because an athlete, superstar, movie star, singer is not every day going to go and be willing to do their DNA.
Right.
Okay, we had a lot more than that going in.
Right.
You know, we did the you started it off with the research. I came in, I looked at what you found, newspaper clippings that were 50, 60 years old, whatever it may be. A lot of stuff like that. But also, with you, you're a spitting image of the individual. So, I mean, you know, that's a big factor, too. You can't get around that. And, you know, the complications of possible any medical things, you know.
Right.
So we had a lot of things going on in our favor, and thank God that it's moving forward.
Yeah.
I'm glad that it's done and it's behind us. I'm very happy because now we can get down to work. And also, I wanted to tell the public, I know that you all want to make everything a Jerry Springer or a Maury Povich moment. Yes, he's the father. But we don't do that at Syndicated News. That's down the road a ways. We want to have doctors, lawyers, scientists
explain
things like we've done this evening in a respectful manner. And also, I wanted to let you know, not just for Cassie as an individual, because we've got many others that have now come forward and we're doing the same type of work with them, but we respect all family members, the ones that want the information and also the ones that don't. And
of course,
if you are a participant, if, I don't know, maybe you're a biographer or you're a webmaster, or you're a hanger-on, you've got to understand that by merely helping a family or participating with them, it does not give you the automatic right to delve into the privacy of that family. And here at Syndicated News, we won't do it. We don't delve into the privacy matters of any family.
No.
Well, that's what I like about your show, because you guys do it the right way.
Right.
See, and that's why only any good investigators will hook up with you, because you guys do it the right way. There's no yelling and screaming. There's no pointing fingers. There's none of this, none of that. You do your work.
Privacy, or just because you're a fan even, or a biographer, it doesn't automatically entitle you to the private matter of a family. And if you're a fan because you love a character, and you maybe even grew up with that character, and you love watching them on TV, it does not entitle you to get in the middle of their family business. And these matters are emotional. You have no idea what happened with the DNA testing when they were bringing back families that had gone through World War II to find out that the Catholic had married a Jewish gal, and she was raising the kid Jewish, and he wanted to, you know, he had a rosary, and when they come out with a Jewish disease, they had Tay-Sachs, how could that be? We're Catholics. All those things happen, and we don't have the right, simply because we enjoy someone on TV or we like listening to their music, it does not give us the right to delve into their private matters. And I wanted to let you know, that's one thing I learned from Dr. Bechinger, as well as DNA Spectrum and the other group that has been so kind that we're going to be talking about now, the other group, Family Test, what was the name of that
Ancestry.com.
Ancestry.com. The reserves of information that they collect. It doesn't mean that because you're a biographer or a secretary or a webmaster or a blogger or a hanger-on or a fan, it doesn't give you the authority to meddle in family business. And I say that for the reasons that We don't do that here at Syndicated News.
Right.
And that's so many fans and hanger-ons were so upset because what they wanted was Jerry Springer. This is not Jerry Springer.
Yeah.
We didn't bring... We don't do mud fights. We don't do any of that nonsense. We bring in authorities in that area, the doctor, the lawyer, the scientist, and the private detective who works on a case. Those are the people who know the matter. And even Mr. Colucci now, after having finished this case, he is not going to divulge to the public the private matters and information that he came to his desk. As a product of the work that he did,
you never do that.
When it comes out, it comes out,
and that's the choice. And that's the choice of the client. The client when it comes out, not me.
Exactly. And sometimes years ago, many who didn't have the information or the money to pay for investigation couldn't do it. But today, these are more accessible. This information is more accessible, and don't let yourself be led by exciting shows like TMC and 2020 and you can hear it now from at 11. Don't get motivated by that, thinking you enjoy a show, maybe Charlie Sheen, or you like watching Friends, that somehow you are emotionally attached to that performer, and that now you're entitled to private information. No, you're not. And please know that, because family, when these matters come to the table and they realize, oh, my goodness, that is my relative, who gets thrown under the bus? The bloggers, the fans, the hanger-ons, and you know who you are. I'm letting you know that because when push comes to shove, family will stick to family. And sometimes they stay away. But the point is, don't be the one who's a hanger-on, who's a blogger, or a fan who thinks that just because you love that performer that now you're entitled to all their private information. No, you're not. Please know that. And we will never divulge anything here at Syndicated News. And that's why Mr. Colucci agreed to appear here. That's why Dr. Bettinger agreed to appear. And that's why our CEO, notice it wasn't the clerk, it was the CEO of DNA Spectrum, Mr. Yates, that participated in our program. We want to talk to the heads of business. We don't want to talk to someone's clerk or someone's fan or someone's webmaster. That doesn't interest us in the least. We want the principals. And tonight we had all the principals, Kathy and Mr. Vito Colucci.
These are people who have been involved in my case. With the exception of Mr. Yates, who's by proxy his business, but with respect to everyone has been involved in my case that has been on
the show. Ladies, let me say this in my part here. It's my first time on the show. I enjoyed it very much. I like the way you do your show, okay? I like what you guys stand for, okay, and your motto and everything else here. And this has been a pleasure for me tonight. In saying that, I do have to say goodbye on my part because I do have another commitment in a few minutes.
Okay.
So I'm sorry to have to do that because I enjoy this, but I do have to get to another show in about 10 minutes.
Mr. Colucci is going to be joining Syndicated News in that he'll have his business page here. It will be in addition to his website, but he'll have his own private page where he will be posting news or his blog and his services and links to his website, and he will be the president of news.net. That's the new.
You're breaking up, Ruthie.
Yes.
Oh, so sorry. Is that better?
Yes.
Yes.
We wanted to announce that Mr. Colucci will have his page at Syndicated News. It'll be linked to his private company website, and he will be the private detective that we will recommend when someone calls looking for this type of help at Syndicated News. That's the announcement.
Thank you very much. It'll be my pleasure to do that, and we will talk again. And to the listeners, I wish you all truly a happy Valentine's Day and a good night, and God bless you from my part.
A lovely evening. Thank you, Vito. Thank you.
Thank you, Vito.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank Bye-bye. You. Thank you so much. Good night.
Good night.
It's been a lovely evening, wouldn't you say?
I would say so. Absolutely.
It's been a very successful night, and that's why when we're going to deal with a matter of this significance, of this importance, it's most important that we only have principals involved in the conversation, not people who are there for the moment because it's salacious and they think something exciting is going to happen and give themselves titles that don't exist. That's quite annoying for me. And in any case, I want it now. We're going to take a moment. It's, my goodness, it's 8:45. I wanted to thank everyone, Mr. Yates. I wanted to thank Mr. Colucci and especially Dr. Bettinger, the geneticist. And I wanted to make the announcement that our lovely Cassandra has already been past her exams and her testing, and she is now quite relieved and happy to learn that the information she sought was obtained. And now can we get back to work, Cassie?
We can finally get back to work, and I'm very happy that this is all behind us. And, you know, like I said, it's been a very long journey in history, and I'm very excited to move forward. My children are very excited to move forward. And we're going to continue in the long legacy that is my name of Cassandra Luciana Arnaz.
Say it again, only because we had some beep on the phone.
Cassandra Luciana Arnaz.
I love saying that for her. And she, Luciana, let's start it over.
Cassandra
Luciana Arnaz is our Vice President of Marketing and our Media Specialist. And I promise for those of you that got upset that I will stay out of Twitter. I will only go in there now and again, and I won't mess up her work. If you see something that's ridiculous, count on it. It's usually me. It's not Cassie. She knows how to run her business. I sometimes jump in there, and I want to do some, I want to talk about this. I don't know the paradigms for Twitter. I'm just learning and reading, and it doesn't matter enough to me. Now we have a professional that manages that, and I'm leaving it to her. And also I wanted to announce that when our Spanish division, it's developing and it's growing beautifully as it develops, I'm not going to be involved in that. It has, that Spanish division has its directors, that's Eduardo Quezada-Candon and Roberto Arguello Riot, and those two gentlemen run that division, and I'm staying out of it because I don't have the talent that's needed for that area of news and music and culture. So I'm staying out of their way. I will man their phones from time to time. I will do that because they need that kind of help. But they manage that division so well, I'm but an interference. So I'm going to leave them alone. I'm getting out of their hair. That's the announcement I wanted to make. As always, anyone involved in syndicated news, of course you're going to have your relatives and friends' musical performances announced, and one that's coming up, because he's going to be coming out in public, will be, of course, Orlando Delgado, known as Landy Nova. We're going to play one of his songs, and the reason I'm mentioning him is because, as you know, that's a wonderful case which we're going to be talking to Vito Colucci about the case of Landy Nova. Now, if you know that you are accepting royalties that you know belong to Landy Nova, and we've proven it, we've already gone to the Library of Congress, we've already downloaded the documentation that shows his name on it, so there's no question. Going to court, we don't even have to anymore, because when you have the stuff in hand like Cassie does now, she's already established, and it just gives you a sense of relief. But in the case of Landy Nova, if you know you are collecting royalties that do not belong to you, and you know that they're coming from, they should be going to Landy Nova, Orlando Delgado, and you've been collecting them, avoid being arrested for grand larceny. That's 37 years worth of royalty stealing. Make a deal. Get in front of that and make a deal and return that money, because he's like a dog with a bone. This case is not going to stop until he is the rightful owner of his royalties, and that's 37 years worth of royalties, and he wants them back every dime, and that I can't control. My recommendation to whomever's collecting, that you get an attorney and make sure you give that money back, because the fact that forensics now is very easy to prove and very easy to collect. One company already came forward and participated with Lanzinova, Orlando Delgado, and gave him back, started to give him back his money. And I noticed the check stopped, and you still owe him some money. So get with it. Get with it, because we're watching. And we're going to take a moment to do some housekeeping, and we're going to give you Mr. Lanzinova here, because he's just such fun. So you can listen for a moment. And let's see, La Salsa de Lanzinova, that would be fun. But Miami Mambo, I just love that song. And here it is by Lanzinova.
Miami!
Esperanza de encontrarme contigo, contigo, contigo.
la esperanza de encontrarte contigo. Te quiero, mi amorcito, vuelvo y te lo repito. No pierdo la esperanza de encontrarte contigo.
I love that. That's lovely. I love that Miami Mambo. It's fantastic. I love Miami for all the wonderful things that we learned there and for all the lovely, gracious people that received us when we were there in Miami. And I want to thank you all. And Cassie, you had some stuff to say?
I do. I wanted to take a moment just to thank everyone who was on our panel this evening. Dr. Bettinger, for all of his research and his dedication and passion towards my case. And for everyone who's, obviously these are individuals who aided me in getting my results, my DNA results, my DNA panels, the whole entire nine. Vito Colucci for all of his investigative and footwork and hard research and legal documentation to, you know, DNA collecting on my end. For everything that he has been by way of support to me, for my research team who has been undoubtedly and very caring and very supportive to me every day since 2008, and
hardworking,
very much so, 24 hours a day they work, and they do a lot of work for me, and more importantly, Jonna Lavery Paradise, who has done a lot of footwork for me, and again, my family. I'm very, very thankful to you, Ruthie, to the entire panel, to everyone at Syndicated News, to everyone who supported me out there, who are listeners who are listening tonight. Thank you so much for tuning in, and please understand that our panel did change up a little bit. It is Valentine's Day, and that tends to happen. And in this case, we pulled together as much as we could. I wanted to educate everyone by way of the steps on how DNA is collected, how it's possible to collect it, how it works, so that there are, if you have questions in your minds, which undoubtedly you do, that this might have been able to paint a little bit more of a better picture for everyone. Your genealogy is very important. I have met several doctors who have said to me, please let me know where I can buy this test in case, God forbid, something happens to me on the way home. I can at least swab and be responsible to leave a genetic blueprint behind for my children.
Cassie,
this is very important.
Tell us about you were talking to the dentist.
Yesterday,
actually. That was a wonderful, important thing. Could you share that with us?
Well, apparently genetics play an important role in many medical illnesses. And in my case, I know many listeners who are listening know that my grandmother did not have the greatest of teeth. So that kind of falls on the genetic line of what's wrong with me. I also don't have the greatest of teeth. So when I had my visit yesterday with my dentist, he had said to me, he was very clear, Cassandra, explain to me a little bit more about this DNA call you're going to have tomorrow. And I said, well, they can tell and they can do a swab or take your blood or just from a saliva sample. It's based on enzymes that your body produces that are, that match you up one in so many and millions or what have you. And so he said to me, he goes, explain to me how this can help. I said, well, for me, my genetic blueprint, I can tell for my children's grandchildren, based on the tests that we've already obtained. And we've obtained several, not just one or two. So it made a very good blueprint for us. And he had said, is it simple to do? Can I just go? And I said, just as you're cleaning my mouth, you can obtain a sample. Just that easy. It's just 1, 2, 3. And he said, how long does it take for the results? And I said, anywhere from 2 to 4 days, unless you do an expanded panel. It could take months. He said, for me and my children, he's like, I've got little ones. He says, you know what? I might tell me how to order this test because I really want to do this. In case something, God forbid, does happen, because the day before, ironically, he was nearly sandwiched on the coming to work by two semis. So he said, I saw my life flash before my eyes. And he said, what would I have left my children if they would not know my DNA? I said, exactly. So he will be one of those purchasing the kit from DNA Spectrum, and learning more about his genetic code for his children. It's a responsible thing to do, he said. So, and I have to agree with him, 100%.
And for all of you who want to have genetic testing done, just go online and buy it. It's not like years ago where it costs thousands. It's not necessary now. It's much cheaper, it's more accessible, and you can know. Maybe there's nothing wrong, but you just want to know. Go ahead and get your testing done, too. You'll feel a lot better. It's kind of like about 15, 20 years ago when people would go and test themselves for AIDS and everybody was afraid. I don't want to know. I'm afraid. And it was the best thing you ever did because you know what? Most of the time, it found out you didn't have any problem like that, and you put it behind you. Put it behind you like Kathy did. Learn who you are. Learn where you're headed. And it's one of the great statements in Pitbull's song. How does that go? To know about the beginning. You have
to know about.
How does that go? That was just a wonderful expression.
To know about.
To
know about
the future,
you have to go back in time.
You have to go back in time. What a great thing when I saw that piece of artwork. I just loved it. I loved it. It's beautiful.
And he's been very supportive as well. I'm very thankful for his support, for the support of his, you know, his sisters and his entire family, for just, you know, his music is very inspirational to me and my family and my children. And the fact that he's Cuban is also very important on our end. But with respect to how we, you know, with Pitt and or the way I like to refer to him as Armando, he's setting his own blueprint, and I'm very thankful that he took time to support, you know, this interview, and we had, again, our panel was supposed to be a little bit more different with respect to focusing a little on genetic laws and
that's
adoption.
That's exactly what I wanted. That's exactly
right.
What we did.
Right. And so in effort to help change legislation, that's going to be a whole entire different call. And we'll expand on that a little bit further later on in the future.
Anyway, we're going to wrap up the night. We want to thank everybody for visiting with us. We so enjoyed you. And we're going to throw some music on as we say goodnight. And Yoko is going to be performing in March, I believe. And here is a little bit of Yoko as we close out. Good night, everybody. Good night, Kathy.
Good night, good night, good night.
De repente.